I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. This morning, the city of New York honored the victims of September 11th with silence and the ringing of a fire department bell. Six months ago, it wasn't just the sound of the plane hitting the building that caught you. It wasn't just the roar of the World Trade Center tower's collapse. It wasn't just the eerie quiet, the change, the disbelief. It was all those things, and more, including the ominous images of dark, heavy smoke billowing, hovering, and hanging, then drifting over what looked like all of Lower Manhattan. The emotional effects of September 11th are still being worked out, but the plume seen by residents and studied by scientists leaves certain other kinds of questions unanswered. What exactly was in that air? Where did it all go? From asbestos to ash, lead to mercury and ultrafine particulates, some experts say human health is still at risk 6 months later. Connection listeners, you saw the cloud of dark smoke rising over and past Ground Zero. Who do you think is responsible for making the streets and apartments of New York City toxin-free? There is no precedent, and not much of a plan. Is cleanup even possible? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me today is Hugh Kaufman. He's chief investigator for the Ombudsman Office for the EPA. His office is holding hearings in New York City today on public health and the effects of September 11th. He's joining us from the studios of WNYC in Lower Manhattan. Also on the program, George Thurston. He is associate professor of environmental medicine at NYU School of Medicine. But first, we'll hear from Kirk Johnson, who's a reporter for the New York Times. Kirk, there are a number of events planned for today. We heard the ringing of the bell and a series of searchlights will be illuminated this evening at Ground Zero?
Right. There are all sorts of ways that people are trying to keep this in mind as time goes by.
And the health concerns that we're talking about this hour, is it mainly an issue of air quality?
Well, in the immediate hours and days after September 11th, the government was presented with really an unprecedented problem, and it had some of the tools to fight that problem, and some it clearly didn't. The various government agencies divided up the responsibilities. There was Ground Zero, there were the public areas the EPA took responsibility for, and I think a lot of the issues and confusions that have arisen have come out of that division. Public spaces, the outdoor streets and sidewalks of the city downtown were treated differently and with a different kind of attention than the indoor spaces, the apartments and privately owned buildings. And a lot of the anxiety and issues and confusion have come from those divisions.
And are people worried about this? Do they talk about it a lot?
Oh, it's still a huge issue downtown. I've talked to a lot of people over the last few months, from residents to building owners, and they have been put in a position of really being, I think, on their own, and to a great degree. The emphasis by the city and the government was, first of all, at Ground Zero, understandably enough. That's where the height of the real dangerous pollution was, from things like benzene and other really volatile and dangerous elements that were in the smoke that really dissipate pretty quickly into the environment. The EPA tested in the public areas around Ground Zero, but people who had dust and smoke blasted into their apartments, to a great degree, had little contact with this government machine that had grown up to deal with the disaster. And some people I've talked to just broke out the paper towels and the brooms and cleaned it up themselves and didn't worry. And others have worried immensely by what they've heard. But few have really had, I think, the satisfaction of real consonant knowledge of what they have faced.
And aside from the hearing that's being held by the Ombudsman's Office of the EPA, which we'll be talking about this hour, there are then task forces and hospitals and other different queries going on to try and get the answers to those questions now, right?
There are a lot of medical and other types of tests underway. The EPA is doing tests now looking at testing lab animals for some of the dust particulates that were in the dust cloud. There's a study underway at Columbia looking for pregnant women who may have been exposed to the dust and smoke. But there has been also a lot of hyperbole, I think, on both sides in speaking to some of the physicians who have treated probably more than a lot of the people who have complained of various respiratory issues after September 11th. There's a doctor at Mount Sinai who has seen many of these people, and his take on this, which I tended to put quite a lot of weight on, was that both ends of the extreme on the risk factor here had it wrong. He thought there was a huge middle ground, that the government had probably underestimated the risks in the days and weeks right after September 11th. But that there had been a certain degree of alarm and exaggeration and in the media included that tended to hype some of the dangers after that. He said there are people clearly who have been had their health affected by this, but on the other hand, he doesn't really expect to see, based on any of the evidence that has come out so far, serious long-term health consequences like cancer clusters or anything like that.
Kirk, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kirk Johnson is a reporter with the New York Times. As I mentioned earlier, we turn now to Hugh Kaufman, who's chief investigator for the Ombudsman's Office for the EPA, George Thurston, who's associate professor of environmental medicine at the New York University School of Medicine. Hugh, I'll begin with you because Kirk was talking about, on the one hand, a lot of hyperbole, and on the other hand, a lot of questions that we still don't have answers for.
Well, as your listeners may or may not know, the local congressman for Ground Zero area is Jerry Nadler, and he asked us to investigate the case because based on his limited investigation, it appeared that the Environmental Protection Agency was providing false information to the public about the situation. Let me read you a couple of quotes from September 13th, 2001 from the Environmental Protection Agency. And what we are is a watchdog to make sure the agency is doing its job. Quote, the levels of lead, asbestos, and volatile organic samples, compounds, and air samples taken on Tuesday downwind are not detectable or not of concern. Then here's a second quote. Quote, EPA is greatly relieved to have learned that there appears to be no significant levels of asbestos dust in the air in New York City. Close quote. Now, we put that against the letter and ruling of the Assistant Secretary of Occupational Safety and Health. This is the man who runs OSHA. And he basically says, in that the materials containing asbestos were used in the construction of the Twin Towers, the settled dust from their collapse must be presumed to contain asbestos. So we have a conflict. EPA has said there is no asbestos, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration says that it all must be considered to contain asbestos, and in fact, in our analysis, we find that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration is correct.
Hugh, let me bring George Thurston in on this because, George, you've been testing the air in New York City. You were testing it before September 11th and afterwards. He was talking about asbestos, but there's also been reports of lead and mercury and other things that showed up in that plume. What did you find out?
Well, yes, we have been monitoring in New York, not right at the near the World Trade Center, but we did once the disaster September 11th happened. We actually went down the day after the 12th and collected part of our team at NYU went down and collected samples of the fallout dust, which we have since analyzed at a variety of locations in the community surrounding Ground Zero. And we also set up at NYU Downtown Hospital on Beekman Street a monitoring station on the Friday the 14th, and we monitored there until the end of the year when, you know, all the fires were out and basically there was little left to monitor.
So what did you find? Was there poison in the air?
Well, we found, of course, that the levels were quite high in September, but by early October, the pollution levels, and we focused on particulate matter, particles in the air, the pollution levels had really returned to levels similar to what we were finding at our Midtown location up at the NYU School of Medicine. And really, I'd have to sort of agree with a physician who talked to Kirk Johnson in saying, you know, yes, there were acute risks at the time from these levels. They were short-term peaks, but in the data that we've collected, first of all, largely is consistent with what EPA has found. And secondly, that everything I've seen, I don't see any serious long-term effects risk, you know, over and above living in a city. There's always risk of living in a city. I just had a study that I was co-author on, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, showing that there are risks from long-term exposures to particulate matter.
Okay, George, let me bring Hugh back in here.
So the risks are there, but right. I don't see anything unusual in terms of long-term risks from this short-term occurrence.
Hugh Kaufman, seems like there's two stories here. One is the exposure to whatever, the rescue workers, the firemen, the people who are down at the site in and around the week or the 10 days after the explosion, and then the longer-term effects on residents who may have got this kind of dust coming in through the air filtering system of their apartments. Bottom line, what's the risk? What do we know?
Well, first of all, we have another conflict. In October, when Dr. Thurston said the air was fine, the head of the Delta group...
No, I don't think I said it was fine. I said it was
Let
down.
Me finish. I'll let you talk, okay. Mr. Thurston. Yeah. Let me talk, please. Okay? Thank you, sir. At the same time, the head of the Delta group, Dr. Cahill, who goes to emergencies, he's the number one person that the federal government uses and foreign governments use to test air pollution. He tested the air pollution at the Kuwaiti oil fields. He tested the air pollution from Mount St. Helens.
I need you to be brief just because we're coming up to a break.
He found the highest levels of very fine particulates ever recorded in a disaster in the history of the world. So that was his testimony, Mr.
Yeah.
Thurston. I'm sorry that you laugh about a doctor's testimony.
But the levels, I looked at those levels, and I know when they occurred, and we were monitoring, too, and I find that assertion not to be
well,
reasonable.
Are you going to testify today?
Based on the data.
Are you going to testify today?
I have testified before the Senate.
No, you have.
Yes, I have.
Mr. Thurston, if you want to testify and take on Mr. Cahill, you can do that.
George Thurston, briefly.
Yeah, sorry. What?
Oh, it's okay. You know what? We're going to come back because we have to take time out for a break. Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about air quality in New York City, the testing, the days afterwards, but also the long-term effects. And we're interested in having you join us. 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from National Public Radio.
From Boston University, VIP Fasses.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour we're talking on the six-month anniversary of September 11th about the effects of that event on the people who live in that city. I have two guests with me at this point. Hugh Kaufman is chief investigator for the Ombudsman's Office for the EPA. George Thurston is associate professor of environmental medicine at New York University School of Medicine. Now, there's obviously disagreement between the two of you about the work that was done and the results that came in. Can I just say that, you know, regardless of an argument over the size of the particulates or who would testify or who would not testify. What we're hoping to try and get close to here is an understanding of whether or not there are long-term health effects that the city needs to deal with in an aggressive way, whether or not simply what we're talking about are the effects on the people who are at the site close to the time of the accident. George Thurston, in your view, did the EPA act completely honorably from start to finish here?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize for laughing. What I was reacting to was the great hyperbole of the statement. I'm not dismissing in any way the pollution exposures that occurred in the days following the pollution episode. I want to make that clear. It's just that there has been, you know, such alarmism about this that exceeds the risks, and I think that was a good example of
fair enough, though, right?
Okay.
I mean, if people saw that event and people,
yes, there was an acute and a very high pollution levels. The data that were being cited for that were collected in October, and you know, I was monitoring, and I know what they're talking about. And much of that pollution was throughout the whole region. It was transported in. The sulfur levels they were seeing and reporting and talking about, much of it was transported into New York, and you could see it throughout the metropolitan area.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just
you know that Hugh Kaufman is doing holding these hearings because there are serious questions raised about whether or not the EPA was always looking after the best interests of people in New York.
Right.
Your
well,
view, based on
to,
what you
I,
said.
In my testimony before the Senate on this, I pointed out that EPA, I have to agree, EPA hasn't handled this correctly from start to finish, and they too quickly declared the air safe, is a term that I wouldn't use because, first of all, they didn't have the information at that time to make that declaration, and secondly, because it means a different thing to different people. So I think that was not an appropriate thing to do, and I've been critical of EPA in public about the way they handled this. But it was a disaster, and people make mistakes.
Hugh Kaufman, the EPA is supposed to have a plan for every disaster. Was there anything close to a functional plan that the EPA should have or could have or was following?
Yeah, I was one of the people who started EPA over 30 years ago and started the hazardous waste and emergency response programs in the 70s under the Nixon and Ford administration. We've had a plan in place for over 20 years. We used it with the Exxon Valdez. We use it in giant emergencies all over the country, and we help governments around the world. It's called the National Contingency Plan. And in this particular case, as soon as the airplanes hit, we have all over the country what's called on-scene coordinators. Those on-scene coordinators, because the planes were down, got into their cars from as far away as Kansas and Missouri and headed to New York. They were on duty with the Tyvek suits, with the respirators. They were taking samples outside. They went into people's homes and started taking samples inside. They were following the procedures that EPA has been following for over 20 years. And the on top of that, the U.S. Geological Survey got permission to fly a NASA plane to monitor with their high-resolution technology the plume as it was occurring and found that it was extremely caustic at 12.1. However, that data was hidden from the public. All of this was going on the week of September 11th. At some point in our investigation, we have found that at some point between September 11th and October, someone stopped the government from using the National Contingency Plan. And that's what I'm trying to find that out right now. The government was taken off the case when the National Contingency Plan was being implemented, when samples were being taken by our on-scene coordinators. And Mrs. Whitman, the administrator, told everyone things were safe, and all the data we had showed quite the opposite.
So the effect was that then all these people who had left their apartments went home, and
We have testimony that the insurance companies that were paying for the people who left their apartments sent them back home early because the insurance company said, EPA says it's safe, we're not going to pay for a hotel anymore. And, of course, that's a big problem. So right now we are investigating who called off the use of the National Contingency Plan and who authorized Mrs. Whitman to say that everything is safe when all the data show it wasn't, and who told USGS not to share their data that demonstrated how caustic the material was, and more important, why the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, their information totally conflicts with what EPA says. There's a conundrum here.
I want to bring in another voice here. Dr. Stephen Markowitz is on the line. He's an occupational medical physician and director for the Center of Biology of Natural Systems at Queen's College. And, Stephen, you have been doing some testing, not of the city workers, the unionized people who are down on site, but rather the day workers, the day laborers who are hired to come in and help clean out apartments, people who in many cases weren't even wearing respiratory gear. Is that accurate?
Yes. We opened up a mobile medical monitoring unit downtown a block from the World Trade Center site in mid-January, and we actually weren't sure whether we'd be able to find the building cleanup workers. Many of these are day laborers who are picked up from street corners to clean the buildings. But when we opened, over 100 people showed up, and within a couple of days, 500 people, we had 500 people on our waiting list to be seen. We were offering free medical evaluations focusing on occupational health. Also, we were fitting people for respirators and giving them free respirators so they'd have them for their next dusty job.
What were you finding, though, in the people who came to see you? Was there any sort of common effect of the work that you could trace?
Sure. We ended up examining over 400 people. They came to us mostly because they were sick. So we really can't talk about prevalence of disease so much, as much as the pattern of what we found. People had two types of problems. One is they had persistent airway irritation, so they had sore throat, they had nasal congestion, they had some chest discomfort. And secondly, they had some systemic symptoms such as headache, insomnia, poor appetite. What was remarkable was how similar these symptoms were among the over 400 people, and also how persistent they were. Most of these building cleanup workers, and by the way, they were the workers who cleaned up the Verizon building, One Liberty Plaza, immediately adjacent to Ground Zero.
These are the places that were knee-deep in dust, am I right?
Well, I don't, you know, inches deep, certainly.
Yeah.
Is that they had finished their work, by and large, by the end of November into December. So we were seeing them 4 to 8 weeks after they stopped working, and they were still sick. And that's very unusual in an occupational health situation.
And, Stephen, one of the things that you said in earlier testimony that I want you to explain the importance of here is that, in your view, this ought not to be discussed as an air quality issue, but it ought to be discussed straightforward as a health issue. Why the distinction?
Well, because I think to a large measure the health dimension has been neglected. What I mean by that is that we know the firefighters have been examined by the fire department, but the vast majority of Ground Zero workers have not systematically received proper occupational medical evaluation to date. We happened on the building cleanup workers. They hadn't been examined. Most of them don't have insurance. They don't have physicians. If they go to their local physician and pay out of pocket, they're certainly not going to get the proper occupational health advice that we were able to give them because that's our expertise. And then when we opened this vehicle, mobile unit, specifically for the building cleanup workers, we got dozens of calls from all kinds of people, residents, people who had worked in and around Ground Zero, really around Ground Zero, not so much at Ground Zero, who weren't getting medical attention. And I think that for all the effort that's gone into characterizing air quality, there has not been coordinated, available, accessible, proper medical services for people downtown.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. George Thurston, you study environmental medicine at New York University School of Medicine. Should this now be specifically an issue of indoor air quality and the ongoing effects that Stephen Markowitz is talking about?
Yeah, I largely agree with that. I mean, our monitoring of the outdoor air in the community. Now, you know, I think that is a strong distinction that has to be made between Ground Zero, where the exposures were much higher, orders of magnitude higher than in the community. And, you know, so we have to separate those two populations when we're discussing this. And when I was saying in terms of the effects that are likely based on the data that we've seen, I was discussing the community. The Ground Zero people, you know, should have been wearing respirators and many weren't. And those risks are much higher and really need to be addressed more intensively. recently. But we're involved in putting in applications to try and get some funding to do some, as well as other institutions around the area, to look at the bottom line, which is people's health, and to make sure or to make a more definite determination of whether there are any effects that are able to be studied. You mentioned earlier the study that Columbia and Mount Sinai are doing, looking at pregnant women. There may be some effects possible in especially sensitive populations, people with a pre-existing disease or, pregnant women, this kind of thing. So I think we need to, go from the data we have is we can make certain determinations, but obviously we didn't start monitoring until Friday.
Right.
The people from UC Davis didn't start monitoring until October. So those data, we have what we have, but we don't have everything. We don't have on the day of the disaster and that kind of thing, at least not right near ground zero.
Right.
So we can only go so far by looking at that and saying, well, it looks like, there were probably acute effects, but those are behind us, and there probably aren't long-term implications of the community exposures. But the bottom line is people's health, and then, only by looking at the populations can we determine that for sure.
Connection listeners, you saw the event that happened on September 11th. You saw the amount of smoke and dust in the air. I'm wondering whether or not there are people listening to us now who have experiences or ideas about from their own exposure or experiences that might shed some light on this. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Jamaica Plain next, and Peg is joining us. Hi, Peg.
Hi, this is a very interesting discussion. When I was in New York a couple of months ago, I was amazed and really taken aback that even a couple of miles from ground zero, when a stiff wind came up after the clouds, after a rainstorm lifted, the smell was just indescribable to me. Also, there's been a lot of discussion recently about what will be done to this site in order to not just create a memorial, but to make use of this very valuable commercial space. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned very much is the creation of a park, planting trees, which would, I think, be a life-affirming memorial as well as send an interesting social and political message to the rest of the world. But also a reason for doing this is to, of course, purify the air, and it would continue mm-hmm. to do so for years. And I wonder if your experts might comment on that idea.
Can I pick up on the first part of what you said, Peg, though, that you were there not long ago and the wind came up and you were aware of it? Hugh Kaufman, you're at the WNYC studios in Lower Manhattan. The type of thing that Peg's talking about, is that something that residents of New York ought to be concerned about, that even now there could be effects, residual or otherwise?
We have testimony from our hearings. We had a 12-hour hearing 2 weeks ago. We have another one today from residents who are making the same points as your caller, which is that you can taste the hazardous material in the air when the wind blows, etc.
Can you? Have you noticed?
Well, I have investigated more hazardous waste sites in the United States than probably anyone else in the federal government, and I can taste it when the wind blows right. You have dust still in the area. You have dust on rooftops. You have the dust on scaffoldings. When they take the scaffolding down, it all comes down. There is a hazardous material risk. Our job is not to count the dead bodies, not to measure how many people are sick. Our job under law is to prevent people from being sick. And so that's why I focus in on the testing, why I focus in on the remediation in schools and apartments, why I focus in to make sure the public is being told the truth, because that's what prevents people from getting sick. Counting the dead bodies, determining how people have been harmed, does not prevent illness. What prevents illness is removing the hazardous material from the people or the people from the hazardous material.
Dr. Stephen Markowitz, are the taste of the air, the continued exposure, is that something that people need to be cognizant of, need to be thinking of?
Well, I've spent a lot of time down there recently, and I really can't detect much myself. My overall sense is that the air quality's, gotten a lot better, and that is much less of a problem than there was even 2 months ago, where it was very strong. There was a real mismatch between what the air quality, the air testing data were showing at that time, a couple of months ago, and what people were experiencing in terms of symptoms. And I think, actually, that if there had been more prominent health agency involved a couple of months ago, we might have been able to explore that a little better and gotten perhaps to the bottom of why people were having those symptoms, even as the air quality data were showing that there wasn't much of a problem.
We're going to Newton, Massachusetts now, and Allie's joining us. Allie?
Hi. I did my senior thesis at Barnard College in New York City on testing personal exposure to particulate matter in different areas of New York City.
This is just ambient city pollution, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, particulate matter, the same thing that Dr. Thurston was testing.
Right.
And I was wondering, first of all, what just some technical questions, what size particles were you looking at, and did you use stationary monitors, or did you have monitors on people walking around in the area? Because I know there can be some differences.
I don't want to get too technical here insofar as we're trying to figure out, as laymen, you know, what was going on, but... George Thurston, do you adapt your testing equipment to circumstances in the way that Ali's describing?
Well, we didn't do personal monitoring. We did some amount of monitoring, a couple of dust measurements in people's homes, which gave dust that looked a lot like the dust that we collected outdoors in the days following the disaster. The monitoring we did at NYU downtown was for a variety of particle measurements. From, you know, we did particle counts, which is dominated by the ultrafines. We did size fractionating, and you know that's an important distinction to make because when we looked at the dust, we didn't just look at it in a bulk way. We size fractionated it to the particles that were large and unlikely to get deep in the lungs versus the very small particles that are more likely to penetrate into the lungs. And there's quite a difference in their nature. The large particles were very alkaline, as was mentioned. We found a pH of 11 or 12, and I reported
which
this.
Means what, alkaline
well,
particles?
That alkaline is very caustic and irritating, and if you really want, your body wants a pH of 7, which is a neutral. It doesn't want acidic, you know, like sulfuric acid has a pH of
1 or 2. So is this the stuff from all the burning plastic and the melted computers, and is that the sort of thing you're picking up?
Actually, the alkalinity, the very large particles, is largely, we found cement dust and fiberglass was in there. And those would be very irritating to the upper, you know, to the eyes. If it got in your eyes, your nose, your throat, your mouth. And that's what people experience. However, I think it's important to distinguish that the smaller particles in the dust that would be the ones that would penetrate deep in the lung were not alkaline like that. They were more neutral.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about what was in the air, what is in the air. It is 6 months since September 11th, and we're talking about New York City, the health concerns that people in that city have as a result of September 11th. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon, and we're talking this hour about the air quality in New York, the inside air and the outside air, 6 months after the events of September 11th. George Thurston is with me. He's Associate Professor of Environmental Medicine at New York University School of Medicine. We also have with us Hugh Kaufman, Chief Investigator for the Ombudsman's Office for the Environmental Protection Agency. He is conducting hearings today, specifically into what was done right and what was done wrong. Also on the line with us, Dr. Stephen Markowitz, who's an occupational medical physician and director for the Center for the Biology of Natural Systems at Queen's College. And, Doctor, I know you have to leave shortly, so I'm wondering if you can help us with one thing that keeps coming up whenever we're discussing September 11th and the unbelievable cloud that enveloped lower Manhattan as a result of those two planes hitting the buildings, because I keep coming back to, in both medical literature and in newspapers, the point that there is no precedent here, that you know, you could look at the great chemical spills and meltdowns and forest fires and Mount St. Helens, and you're not anywhere going to find a precedent that allows you to measure the health effects of the people you're studying now against anything that has come before. Is that a problem in terms of figuring out both the short and the long-term effects?
Well, there's no precedent that would allow us to predict what is happening or what will happen to people in the future, but we certainly have the tools and methods to address people's problems and also to conduct studies that would give us that information into the future. I mean, certainly in the short and medium-term effects, meaning, you know, weeks to months, it's easy enough to characterize if we set up a proper health system available to people downtown, including the workers, such that they get the proper kind of occupational health evaluation. In terms of long term, it's difficult to study, but it certainly can be done. It's difficult because it's very difficult to characterize what kinds of exposures people have over time, and then to determine, you know, this any particular set of health effects as opposed to what people naturally experience or from other kinds of risk factors. There's a lot of talk about registries, about registering residents downtown, registering workers downtown to look at health effects 10, 20 years down the line. I would favor that certainly for workers. I think for residents, it can be very difficult to do because you have to collect an awful lot of information now and for the next several decades. And it may be worth it, but we ought to ask the really difficult questions whether it's likely to be worth it in order to do that or not.
Now, I get the impression by looking at your testimony that there is, you're noting, resistance to setting up this kind of health monitoring that you think is essential.
Well, I don't know if there's so much active resistance as much as, you know, even though we have a very good, outstanding health care system in New York set up with six medical schools, innumerable hospitals and physicians, not that many people really with expertise in occupational health, somehow the proper care hasn't been made available to people downtown, both the residents and a lot of the workers. It hasn't happened yet. Some of it's happened. A great credit to the fire department for examining most of its firefighters within a matter of months. But there's still a lot of people with a lot of questions and concerns and symptoms, and I just don't see that that the proper health care has been set up for them. I think it's a shame, but we can still do it.
Stephen, thanks so much.
Sure.
Dr. Stephen Markowitz is occupational medical physician and director for the Center for the Biology of Natural Systems at Queen's College. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. To Belmont now. Sandy's joining us. Hi, Sandy. Sandy, we seem to have lost Sandy. So we're going instead to Boston, where Sarah's waiting on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I have a general question. Because it seems as if much of this matter is from building material. A friend of mine, her father has a cancer that is due to asbestos exposure, very little. Are the residents going to be given any, or is there a place they can go to get sort of a list of potential particle cancer, symptoms or something, so they can, 10 years down the line, tell their doctor at a general appointment, I was, at the World Trade Center.
I don't know whether I'm going to go to George Thurston on that, Sarah. The type of registry she's talking about, George, has that ever been conceived of before?
I'm not aware of that, but I might not be the right person to ask. I do know that Senator Clinton's trying to set up a national registry so that we'd have baseline information from which to work. And there's she mentioned that at the hearings that she held on the same topic some weeks ago.
Okay. Could I jump in, Gordon?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Hugh.
Dick Gordon, I'd like to just make a very important point. In our hearings 2 weeks ago, and unlike Senate hearings, they're not staged, we have people come in and testify to the very last person. We had hundreds of residents very concerned because their buildings aren't being cleaned, that they've been abandoned, the building owners have been abandoned by the government, and they aren't as interested in having their health registry as they're interested in having their schools, their homes, their offices professionally cleaned. We were attacked. The United States civilians were attacked. There was an initial hit of 3,000 people killed. But then you have ring areas of hazardous material. It's like chemical warfare that has harmed them or put them in harm's way. And the government, up to now, has looked the other way and has not spent money to prevent them from getting cancer 10, 20, 30 years down the line. We also have testimony that if this is not done, if the government does not take care of those victims, then the city of New York could be bankrupt 10 and 20 years down the line from all of the lawsuits.
All right, Sarah, thanks very much for your call. We have on the line now from Washington, D.C., Joe Mardiak with the Environmental Protection Agency. Joe, your agency's taking a bit of a pounding here today.
Well, I'm not here actually to defend the agency so much as I want to point out just a couple things that are being lost in the conversation. First of all, as was pointed out, it was an acute situation immediately after this unprecedented disaster. And even for our regional office that was located just a few blocks away and had to move to New Jersey because of the crisis, they were back on the spot right afterwards to begin the testing of what the air quality was. They did more than 10,000 samples. 6,000 of those air samples were on asbestos alone, and only 17 of those exceeded the standard that's used as far as asbestos and reentry into buildings is concerned. I would also point out that the EPA, right from the start, had advised people who were right over ground zero, which is obviously where it was of most concern, that those people, those workers, be using respirators and protective gears. We had provided some of that, as well as some other government organizations.
Joe, one of the things that we've been talking about on the program is the health and safety for people who are living inside apartments in the area there.
I'm going to go on to that if I could finish what I had to say. As far as on the indoor quality, from the start, EPA had also advised people strongly. They recommended that when they were returning to their homes or their offices there, that they be cleaned by professional cleaners, that simply wiping it was not going to be enough, that you needed to do serious cleaning inside of those locations. The agency has also set up an indoor air quality task force with the state and other government officials. I understand that the city has also announced a similar task force just a few days ago. EPA has been working with the ATSDR, which is part of HHS agency.
Well, you're getting a little bit ahead with the.
This is all on indoor air, is what I'm talking about. The two task force and the study that the ATSDR has been doing, because our focus is on the health of the individuals up there. I think the point that was raised before about the hyperbole, we are not here to count dead bodies. I think that's an outrageous statement to make. And I would like to close my comments by saying the last time I checked here at the agency, one of the people you have on your program, Mr. Kaufman, is not the chief investigator of the Ombudsman's office. He's not a chief investigator, he's not an investigator, and he does not work in the Ombudsman's office.
Joe, just stay on the line with us, if you will, because my understanding is that the Ombudsman's office at the EPA calls Hugh Kaufman its chief investigator. There is a court case, our listeners should probably know, between the Environmental Protection Agency and the Ombudsman's office, which is before a judge right now determining whether or not the status ought to be changed. But
that has to do with the placement of the office, but not who's working in the office.
Wait a second. I want to have time to respond, Joe.
If you want to bring in the court case,
then we'll talk about Mrs. Whitman's conflict of interest. You want to talk about Mrs. Whitman's conflict of interest?
I am more than happy to address that. That's as you said before, Mr. Kaufman, when you insisted somebody let them finish what you were
saying before
they interrupted.
Go ahead, Joe.
I did not bring in the court case at all, because that's not relevant to what this discussion is here.
It certainly is.
As far as the indoor quality is concerned. What I am bringing up is the fact that I have a problem with you holding yourself out as a chief investigator of the agency when that's not the case.
Joe, you're now getting into the court case.
No, I'm not. I'm pointing out simply that you worked in the Ombudsman's office and you were removed from there in December 2000 under the previous administration.
That's a lie. You're lying. Will you testify to that under oath? You're now going to be a witness, Joe. We'll depose you. Keep going.
That's my understanding.
Keep going, Joe.
Joe, it's Dick Gordon here. I'm going to interrupt you because the legal argument over the status of the Ombudsman's office at the EPA in Washington is a really interesting news story, but it's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is specifically whether or not the EPA did everything it could to ensure the health of people in the area of Ground Zero.
So the EPA has made every effort that it can from the day that this happened to get the testing done, to analyze those results.
Joe, quick question that came up a little earlier that I'd like to hear you on, and that is Hugh Kaufman's allegation that by asking the people...
So I just wanted to at least voice a few of my own personal opinion on this.
Fair enough, but I'm interested in the allegation that Hugh made earlier that having the EPA say that it was safe for people to return to their homes on the 18th of September is something that the EPA has to answer for. Do you see it this way?
What we indicated was the analysis of the data that we had at the time. We indicated, as I said before, the strong encouragement for workers, specifically at that site, that they had to have the respirators and the protective gear. And we had also advised people that when they were going back into their locations, that professional cleaning was going to be necessary in those circumstances, given the fact that the unusual circumstances of the whole location.
Hugh Kaufman?
All right. First of all,
thanks for your time.
Thanks for calling,
Joe. First of all, the EPA sent everybody to the Department of Health. They did not say to have your homes and offices professionally cleaned. Department of Health then said to everybody, and this was all put on the record in the last hearing, to clean your apartments with wet rags and wet mops. So Mr. Mardiak, frankly, is misleading the public. Second, again, let me read you the quote from September 13th by EPA. Quote, EPA is greatly relieved to have learned that there appears to be no significant levels of asbestos dust in the air in New York City. So everything that EPA has been saying, what Mr. Mardiak said again, conflicts with what USGS found, what the head of the Delta Group found, and frankly, what other researchers have found, including Dr. Thurston. Dr. Thurston said on your show just about a half hour ago that EPA's information was not accurate.
Well, so, no, I just said I thought they were premature in making that designation. But I do think there is something we can agree upon, and that is that, you know, it's not the outdoor air that is of the concern at this point. It's the indoor air. And
right.
That's where I
agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. And I think that's why I'm concerned, and that's why I raised the issue 45 minutes ago. EPA was using the National Contingency Plan. Our on-scene coordinators were going inside, taking samples. They were going to follow the plan to remediate the situation, and somebody stopped them. And that's what I'm trying to find out with my investigation, who stopped them and why.
George Thurston, what needs to be done for the people who have concerns about the quality of the air in their apartments?
Well, I do think we should be doing more to finance the cleaning of these apartments. I know we had a hurricane where I lived, and there was some damage to my home, and the government was there, PDQ, to help us cover the expenses that associated with that, and I don't think that level of support has been experienced in Lower Manhattan.
Do you think that there's a reservation on the government's part about opening the door because the insurance claims could be just monstrous?
I have no idea. I just think that if there is a concern at this point, you know, it's some of the apartments haven't been cleaned out yet, and some of them may not have been cleaned out adequately. I don't know. You know, I think that, and ventilation systems, this kind of thing. I think that if there's an area of uncertainty at this point in terms of exposures, it's aside from the ground zero. Okay, again,
I understand.
Aside from ground zero, which is a whole nother issue, and that is a major, you know, concern of those people and the kinds of exposures that they undoubtedly got in the days and weeks and months following this. But in terms of the general public, the only concerns really left at this point are these indoor pollution if they haven't properly cleaned out.
George, I have to interrupt you because we're out of time. Thanks for being with us this hour. Connection listeners, I think we know that we'll be hearing more about this. On the program today, Hugh Kaufman, Chief Investigator for the Ombudsman's Office for the EPA, George Thurston, Associate Professor of Environmental Medicine at New York University School of Medicine. Earlier, we heard from Stephen Markowitz, Occupational Medical Physician, and Kirk Johnson, Reporter for the New York Times. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
This is W.